Now today in our first talk, I'm going to deal with the topic of healing mothers who have suffered miscarriage, stillbirth, or an abortion, and members of their families. And I'm indebted to two books, the Lynn Brothers, their book called Healing the Greatest Hurts, and Dr. Kenneth McCall, Healing the Family Tree. First of all, let's deal with the topic of understanding the trauma of a miscarriage, stillbirth, or an abortion. Until recently, through the Ministry of Healing, we did not take seriously the sad experience of a mother having a miscarriage or a stillbirth. I'm not going to talk too much about abortion and the trauma of it. We can see that. That's self-evident in many ways. Even hospitals did not seem to appreciate the mother's suffering and psychological hurt, treating them somewhat like a person having a cold. Few seemed to realize the trauma suffered by the mother, not only emotionally but physically, from such an incident. When a child is conceived, the mother's body is geared to producing new life within herself. There is a release of a whole new set of emotions and a communion between herself and the unborn child. Every stage of growth produces new feelings and a growing love for this baby. The whole complex system of nourishing that life is a wonderful study. Two lives are so intertwined that it is an example of the closest kind of union between two human beings. The woman begins to experience for the first time a mother's love for her own child. A whole gamut of emotions are involved here, especially love, but tenderness, compassion, gentleness, silent thoughtfulness, great yearning to see that new life. A certain aura of mystery surrounds every mother. There's a special glow in her face. She shares in God's own power of creation. All this is in process when suddenly there's a terrible shock to her body and to her emotional life, and the life within her comes to an end. Yet her body is geared to bring that life to completion and birth. Not many realize the many sad after effects of having miscarriage or a stillbirth. Even husbands did not seem to appreciate it. The thought was, oh, there will be another time and time for another child, so forget it. Just like that. So these mothers tried to forget the sad event, but nature would not let them. Their bodies and their memories and emotions were still much alive to that baby, but are now frustrated, denied the natural fulfillment of one of nature's most beautiful creations, a living baby. So mothers try to suppress their feelings, try to bury their emotional hurt. Everyone around them seemed to forget about the incident, so they too felt they had to forget it. But it was not that easy. Their bodies and their memories would not let them forget. Consequently, they suffered emotional problems of many kinds. The most obvious emotional suffering felt is that of grief. There is just as much grieving in intensity in an early miscarriage as there is in a long pregnancy ending up in a miscarriage. Two doctors, their names Dr. Peppers and Dr. Knapp, researched this area with 42 grieving mothers. It was found that all the mothers mourned with equal intensity, regardless of the length of time involved in the pregnancy. The intense mourning lasted from 4 to 6 months, and with lesser mourning for another 6 months or more. The stages of their grief ran from shock, disorganization, anger, guilt, loss, loneliness, to relief and reestablishment. Further study showed that women who did not move through these stages developed deep emotional problems requiring psychiatric counseling, like chronic depression, a hidden grief, a feeling of constant ache, or an emotional dullness that made a person incapable of answering to the needs of the moment with any kind of sensitivity. This grief and mourning is shared also by the father and other members of the family. In the case of an abortion or a stillbirth, the hurts to the family can be many. One woman who had had an abortion found that her 18-year-old daughter had frequent violent fits of temper toward all the members of the family. The mother revealed that she had also tried to abort her 18-year-old daughter. The mother's trauma expressed itself in a chronic backache. She was led to offer a mass for the aborted baby and for her own healing. When this was done, her back pain disappeared. Her daughter's tantrums also disappeared. Our Dr. Kenneth McCall, in his book, Healing the Family Tree, has found some very interesting results in dealing with the healing of a family members who have had a death in the family through miscarriage, stillbirth, or abortion. He believes that a dead child who has not been properly committed to God in prayer and love or accepted by the family will communicate its needs for love and prayer to some living member of the family, like a twin, or the next child in the family, or the one that is the most sensitive. He has found that when a mass is offered for that child committed to God, is loved and mourned, the living members of the family are healed. He treated more than 200 women who suffered from anorexia nervosa, that is, refusing to eat to the point where a person may starve to death. He found that 84% of these patients had had a death in the family tree that was not mourned. 62% of these deaths were babies. 20% were war deaths and 12 were suicides. When there was a period of grieving and loving prayer offered to God, as in the Mass, the symptoms of anorexia left. Medical studies have shown that there are many causes for anorexia, but one of them can be an unconscious desire not to live or to give life, not to give life to any more children because of a death in the family that was not mourned. Now, let's consider abortion and the hurts from it. First of all, a guilt and unresolved grief are the most obvious emotional hurts experienced by women who have consented to abortions. Guilt will sometimes lead a person to bury and refuse to deal with the grief that is there. It's very likely in cases like this that a woman unconsciously fears being judged to such an extent that she refuses to acknowledge her guilt feelings. Some women have struggled with this unresolved guilt for as long as 50 years. But when they asked for forgiveness from Jesus and their dead child and received it, they were free of their torturing guilt. Other ill effects of an abortion stem from a very deep guilt. A lack of affection is due to an emotional deadness. This comes to light only when there has been deep trust coming from a caring psychotherapy. It has also been found that there is an experience of chronic guilt, a depression around the time of the abortion, a psychosomatic illness, drug addiction, an abuse of alcohol, attempts at suicide, and psychotic breakdowns. Both the Lynn brothers, Dennis and Matt, have observed that abortion is such a deep wound that even the cells of the body remember it when conscious mind has forgotten. Now, the effects of an abortion on members of the family. In a book entitled Men and Abortion, the author studied the effects of abortion on 1,000 men. Their conclusion was, quote, abortion is a great, unrecognized trauma for males, perhaps the only one, that most men go through without help. They found that most of the men felt isolated, grieved, experienced guilt, anger at themselves and their partner, had frequent remembrance of the child and dreams about it, as well as fear over the physical and emotional ill effects to the women. Now, why is there such intense grief over miscarriage, stillbirth, and abortion? First of all, lack of support from the family or community, lack of encouragement in expressing one's grief. Family and even friends avoid talking about it and even tell the mother to forget it. Quite often, there's no funeral service or other proper service for mourning. Second, no clear image of the child remains. In the case of a miscarriage, there are often no body outlines. One woman wrote her experience over her stillbirth in these words. When a child is born dead, there is nothing. The world remembers nothing, and the gap in the womb is replaced by an emptiness in your arms. You are not recording a birth or a death, but both at once. It is the ultimate contradiction. I felt I had created death. Third, everything happens suddenly. So much is unsaid and undone. All this leaves the mother with feelings of guilt and anger. One mother was so affected with guilt over the death of her baby through miscarriage that she turned herself over to the police 6 months afterward. She was innocent, but she confessed to killing her child. She was actually tried for murder, but was saved from conviction by a lawyer who understood the grieving guilt of mothers. Instead, he arranged to have a psychiatrist evaluate the situation. Another reason we should mention helps for grieving parents. Doctors have begun to allow parents to see the dead baby and to touch it, no matter how early the miscarriage has taken place or even how much damage to the stillborn child. It was found that where this was permitted, there were no adverse pathological reactions in mothers who touched their babies prior to death. Parents are being encouraged to give the child a name and to baptize it and arrange a simple funeral. Also, they induce the parents to express their feelings of grief and also contact support groups founded to prevent similar deaths. Such groups help parents to work through their grief and lead them to accept the loss of the child. Now, for Christians, what will help to heal grief best is to know that their relationship with a child can continue after death, and that they can enter into this relationship with their child with Jesus through prayer. Also and especially through the celebration of the Mass, and when they receive Jesus in communion, they can be brought into communion also with their deceased child. Now, how does prayer heal intense grief? By letting Jesus' love enter into the circumstances that have caused the grief. We can encourage the mother to open her heart to Jesus by verbalizing her grief and feelings about the death of her baby, as well as all the attendant circumstances. For example, one woman went through this process. She said she cried for some time, then asked Jesus what could be done about the death of her stillborn child. And Jesus said, "Forgive." After struggling with the word for some time, she finally realized that she was angry with God the Father. With that, she yelled her anger at her Heavenly Father, saying, "How could He take away her baby?" She heard the answer that it was also His child, that He had given it a number of days to live, and had made plans for its life. Then she saw herself being taken by elevator to the operating room, but instead by mistake was taken to the maternity ward, which increased her disappointment. And the Lord said, or rather she said, "Why did you do this to me?" Prolong her agony. And the Lord said, "Trust me." But she could not trust him. She did, however, trust Jesus. And with Jesus' help, she finally forgave the father that evening. Also, we can encourage the mother to ask Jesus to give the child to her to hold and affectionately accept it with him. The mother in question did this, and she wrote, "I felt as though I held him in my heart, a little boy, a firstborn son. Jesus told me that I could select a name for him, and then he would baptize him." Together with Jesus, we can encourage the mother to say and to do all those things she wished she could have said and done for the child. Also encourage her to share with Jesus all the ways she would like to continue her relationship with the child through Jesus. For example, in prayer, anniversary celebrations, offering of the Mass, and at communion time, especially to move into prayer, as we've just shown. Now, the mother in question did this, and then she wrote, "I named him Michael. I felt as though I held him in my heart as I told him how much I loved him, missed him, longed to meet him. Then, miraculously, Jesus baptized him." This is taken from the Lynn brothers. Another prayer that might be said would be to ask forgiveness from the child, also forgiving the doctor who might have been unnecessarily insensitive and rough at the time. After this, another prayer might be offered in which the mother expresses her need to have her son become a powerful intercessor for her. Also to have him ask Jesus to show her how both she and her son might continue to love each other through Jesus. The Lynn brothers suggest that when we ask Jesus to baptize a deceased child, we are asking Jesus to do whatever still needs to be done for that child. For example, by giving it a baptism of desire, or renewing the child with a deeper celebration of Jesus' love offered through us. The Council of Trent recommends that this prayer be followed by a celebration of the Mass, during which the mother and the members of the family receive communion and join Jesus praying for us and the deceased baby to come closer to him in eternal peace. We might suggest that during this particular time, when we are with Jesus in communion, we might also ask Jesus to extend his love to all those who have died and are forgotten, like the thousands of aborted babies throughout the world, and especially the United States. When grief over a dead baby is not shared by the parents, it can lead to divorce. One research has discovered that 90% of grieving couples are in serious trouble in their marriage just months after the loss of their baby. The trouble comes mainly from being unable to share their grief. When both parents pray together over their grief, not only are they healed of their grief, but it also strengthens their marriage. Now, what about dealing with grief over feelings of not wanting the baby? This refers to mothers who feel guilty because they had thoughts during their pregnancy that were resentful, like the discomfort they would experience, like the morning sickness, or were fearful of the changes their baby would bring into their marriage, or the restrictions that would place on her free time, self-fulfillment, regarding the talents that they have, and also the child's growth into an adult. In other words, for 15 years or more, the mother is going to be tied to that child. But such thoughts do not really cause a miscarriage as long as they are occasional. There are a number of reasons for miscarriage, like a conscious rejection of the baby, a neglect to care for herself during pregnancy, having emotional hurts that restrict her ability to nourish the new life within her, or there may be physiological conditions that make it impossible for the fetus to survive because it is deformed. In spite of these reasons, a woman who really wants her baby and miscarries may have guilt feelings and doubt about herself as she remembers the moments of her pregnancy, the times when she was not that perfect expectant mother. And who is? Such was the case of the mother who turned herself into the police 6 months later, praying because she felt she had murdered her baby. For such mothers, the way of praying that we have suggested already, namely praying with Jesus in three steps that we've given, will help them to heal their grief and restore balance to their lives. Now, the question of the need for healing members of the family. Because parents do not deal with their grief properly, it is repressed. They never sufficiently heal their grief. This process is repressed when there is another baby on the way, with the result that the grieving and the bonding processes are in conflict. Consequently, the next child, after the death of a baby, will experience a lack of love and bonding. Sometimes the mother protects herself from future hurts by not allowing herself to love the new baby for fear that she could not bear the loss of that baby. Also, during the pregnancy, women are often anxious and fearful. This feeling is passed on to the baby. Mother continues to be over-anxious, overprotective, even after the baby is born. Also, the children already born are affected by the death of the baby. Children know when their mothers have had a miscarriage or an abortion. The girls in the family may have fears of childbearing and being feminine because they identify with their mothers. Young children are terrified by the shock and depression that they see in their parents' faces who are mourning the loss of a baby. They may feel abandoned by such grieving parents. On the other hand, parents may put up emotional walls between themselves and their children because of guilt and because they may have lost confidence in their ability to be parents. Children grieve in different ways than their parents. A child under 4 sees death usually as a temporary separation. A child that is 5 or 6 thinks that the dead cannot move, but they do see and hear. Between 7 and 9, a child sees death as a state that lasts forever. Such a child might dream about death more often and begin even to look at their own death. From 10 to 12, death is seen as happening to everyone and there's no escape. During the teenage years, children experience grief through a denial of a caring relationship. Because a child's notion of death is not very clear, his grieving may not be intense at once, but he may grieve from time to time for many years. But eventually, children will be healed if they are given assurance that they did not contribute to the death of the baby and that they are loved by their parents even when their parents are grieving but cannot give them the emotional affection they need. When the parents are able to give forgiveness and receive it from their deceased child, they are free of their guilt and anger and no longer transfer it to other members of their family. So we see that prayer for a deceased baby can bring healing to the living children as well as to the entire family. One mother had 6 miscarriages and 2 living children, a girl and a boy, a girl and a boy. The girl was 4 and the boy was 2 years old. By the way, last month, that woman came to my day of prayer in West Haverstraw. And again, we prayed for her. She was on a retreat, and she was led to pray for whomever Jesus wished to bring to her mind at the end of a mass. It was then that she saw in her mind's eye six joyful children run into her arms. She felt as though she embraced all of them with her heart and knew that they were her children, and was very joyful to see how much the other five loved the youngest of these children. They glowed with love for Jesus, for her, and for one another. The next day, the mother and a friend prayed for her six miscarried babies. They went through the rite of baptizing all the children, gave them names. After this ceremony, her living daughter, who was very sensitive and cried easily, was now less serious and much less sensitive. She's curious like any child now, lively and happy, where before she could not accept her little brother and was very annoyed with him, she now plays with him and adores him. Her son, who was always hyperactive, did not care much for people, would not let his mother hold him for any length of time, now had a changed personality. He calmed down, much more oriented to people, gives everyone big bear hugs, seems to adore his bigger sister, and her relationship with her husband grew more loving and relaxed and open. She was free from the shadow grief that plagued her for many years, now that she found another way to love her children in prayer. Now, a parent's prayer for a miscarried, stillborn, or aborted baby. This I'm taking from the Lynn brothers. First of all, forgiveness. Both parents should picture Jesus and Mary holding their baby and offering it to them, the parents. They too should hold the baby and ask Jesus' forgiveness, and also the child's forgiveness for any way they fail to show love for it. Where there's been an abortion, Catholics should go to the sacrament reconciliation to be forgiven the sin of abortion. For a minute, the parents should pause to see what Jesus or the child would say or do to them. Together with Jesus and the child, they should forgive anyone else who may have hurt the child, like the doctor, the nurse, or members of the family. Parents should also deal with an anger they may have experienced toward God for sending the child at what they thought the wrong time, or for taking the child. The next step is baptizing the child. Parents should pick a name for the child and then let Jesus baptize the child into his family. Parents with Jesus can say, "I baptize you, John or Mary, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit." Then see the water poured over the child, making it a new being, healed and filled with God's light. And then the prayer. Both parents should pray for the child to receive all the love that Jesus and Mary would want to give it. When they feel that they really want the baby to be eternally happy, they should release the child into the arms of Jesus and Mary, and see both Jesus and Mary giving it all the things that they are not able to do. The closing part of the prayer should include a request that the child now be a special intercessor for them and their family. Also include a request to Jesus to show them and the child how to continue to give love and receive love with each other through Jesus. Finally, together with Jesus and the child, pray for the family. Now, this can be done outside the time of Mass, but the best time would be in the celebration of a Mass. In that case, they should have the sacrifice of the Mass offered for the deceased baby and participate in it. And when they come to the communion time, they should let Jesus' love and his precious blood flow through them in forgiveness to the child. Also, to all the other deceased members of past ancestors. I'd like to add some percentages, which might have been added earlier perhaps, but the percentages of miscarriages, stillbirths, and abortions. About 10 to 20% of all pregnancies end up in miscarriage. There are 2 stillbirths for every 100 live births. And at this time, in the United States, there are more than 1.5 million abortions each year. That's 4 abortions for every 10 live births. This indicates that babies are the most overlooked persons who need our prayers when we're praying for the deceased. Now, I'd like to give some time for questions and maybe your own insights. Anyone? Jill? Have you tried to talk to him about it? Well, in that case, you simply have to leave it up to the Lord. Continue to pray the Lord will test those memories and in his own way to heal them. Well, then, as you know, even members of a family who are not present at that mass are healed. See? Somehow, we don't know the connection there. But when the mother comes back, children are different. As you found in this mother who had miscarriages, 6 of them. The little boy was healed of being hyperactive and so forth. He didn't know, yet the Lord took care of it. So the Lord can do that. Claire? I don't want to interrupt you, except since we're talking about this, if I can ask an honest question, a show of hands, how many here have had miscarriages? Raise your hand. Okay. Quite a few there. See? Okay.
I'd like to know what it was. They were female, the fact, 2 boys, and I wanted to go desperately. Well, when they found out I had 2 other children, they too took that attitude. Stop worrying about what you don't have, but you think it's what you have. Fine. And I prayed, expected, and I prayed with other ladies, also from local. And their suggestion was, you like to take time when the doctor came to the picture. My doctor said, you last for 6 months and get yourself pregnant again, which is the best remedy. But then my spirit was pleased. I don't know what that was. I was praying with the girl, but if I did it, I didn't want the girl again. She couldn't know if it was a girl. She complained, I guess, it was a girl born. Well, after she was born, she was kind of a crazy kid. And I said, what is this? This is what we do go through. See? Well, he is now 28 years old, and the most loving child on that face of the Lord. Why did I, after wanting this so desperately, why did I do it? I was so anxious about having this so kindly. But the Lord is good, because he's such a good daughter, and I'm the happy for her, five children.
Well, let me say, maybe she was cranky because you really hadn't got over the grieving sufficiently, and there wasn't sufficient bonding then. There was a conflict between the grieving and the bonding. But it isn't too late to deal with that even now, if she's over her crankiness, I don't know.
But it is true, everything that you said this morning is a typical reaction. And if we understand it and offer it to God in prayer, and it does work itself out.
Well, praise God. Aren't we Christians, Catholics, blessed in knowing this as an answer? Yes. How about those people who have no faith? What they must suffer and the trauma and living with that. And no wonder they're depressed. Here. No, this woman here had six of them, and she had a mass offered for all six. So, that could be. Well, like we've done before, and by the way, I'm glad you brought that up. At the Mass today and in future Masses, I want you to write up your family tree and to keep that. Bring it here, and if you choose, it can be put on the altar, or you can hold it in your hand as we offer the Mass, and especially at the petition, okay? And also, when we pray after Communion, Thanksgiving, we'll include all the family trees represented here, and that will mean whatever you have in your hand, and the Lord knows them and all their needs, okay? So that will include the miscarriage, stillbirths, and abortions. Now, that'll be a regular process from now on, okay? And then I'd like to hear results. I'm sure there will be results. In other words, this masses included in the Mass, the precious blood offered for them, has infinite value. So it'll extend to all the family priests, yeah? Well, in a general way, that can be done, and it's being done. But specifically, too, they encourage you to have one Mass offered for those persons. Okay? We don't know how the benefits of the Mass are extended. Whether, in other words, after 50 people, there's no more blessings. It's infinite, see? So why should we limit it? And why should we wait until the Mass can be offered? There's only so much I can do, see? So in the meantime, let us pray for all the family priests represented here. So go to work as much as you can remember from your family history, mother's side, father's side, mother and father on each side, grandparents and so forth, and list down. Some of you have done that. I hope you saved that, okay? And list what they were subject to, negative patterns, so on. And this is what can be prayed for and healed in the bloodline. Jane? could be. Yeah. See, we are still researching this, and this is where your own experience, the word of knowledge, will come through. Thank God that this is opened up now, and we will know more and more why and how these hurts are passed on, whether it's through the genes, whether it's through a inherited memory, and how that's passed on. That's the area of research that is still much of a no man's land. But in the meantime, God is not waiting for that. No matter how it's passed on, He is healing. That's the point. This is what should concern us most. So if there are patterns, negative patterns in the family that can be traced back to several families, this is what you can pray about. Like a tendency to alcoholism, to drugs, certain types of sins, certain type of sin of lust, anger, of crimes of certain kinds, theft, robbery, or whatever. And certain emotional disturbances, if they're passed on, tendencies to suicide in some families. All this has been brought out as part of healing the family tree. Claire? You're dealing with a question I'm going to ask you this afternoon, but that's one way. And if there's no, there is no absolute answer on that. We're in a no man's land where God Himself must deal with it, and we'll have answers for that. Among which, before the baby dies, God will give it a moment of clear insight, like an adult would have, for a decision as to its eternal destiny. And then it can choose God. That would be a baptism of desire. Jenny, you had your hand up? I have part of that incorporated in my notes in the second talk. Yeah, we're talking about memory, and research has proved that even almost at the time of conception, there is something in the cells that begins to record voices, memory of what transpired. Jean? Churches believe at the moment of conception, God creates a soul. We act on that. That's why we're so strong against abortion. Well, if you choose to, that would be certainly the best way to do it. Or at this mass, or if you want preparation, the next month, include the child's name. And when the tape is available, you can go through that prayer form of asking forgiveness, giving the child to Jesus, receiving it from him, asking Jesus to baptize, to go through the baptism. If you know the sex of the child, give it the name, a girl or a boy, and then commit it to the Lord again. Nancy?